Welcome, friends. You're tuned into CorbettReport.com. It is the 16th day of January 2012, and it is a Monday, which must mean none other than Bob Chapman, the international forecaster of theinternationalforecaster.com, is on the line joining us for our weekly conversation. Always a pleasure to have you on the program, Bob. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Well, it is great to have you back again for another Monday morning roundup of news and information. And we have a lot of things on the plate tonight, so let's see how many topics we can get through tonight. First of all, I noticed that you started the most recent edition of the Forecaster talking about that meeting that took place between Sarkozy and Merkel in Berlin last Monday that we were mentioning on the program last week. And you mentioned that basically Sarkozy managed to win from Merkel the concession of a backing for a financial transaction tax. Very, very interesting development indeed. Perhaps you can give us some more details on that.
Well, I think her take is, and I guess her German constituency, that if we're going to have that kind of a tax, we have to have it throughout the entire European Union. And that's what heretofore the British have said, to have Eurozone members, which is 17, only participate in that won't work. And they're right, it won't work. And really, to make it work, you got to have everybody in the world do it. Now, what are we talking about? I don't know, 200 countries or something? And so I think that if you go back into the early 1990s, you will find the UN and the IMF, and to an extent the World Bank, have been pushing for such a tax, and they would like those monies used to fund those three entities. In this case, it would be used to, in each country, to pay back debt. In other words, another form of taxation. Now, the average European country right now, out of that 27 that are in the European Union, they're paying about 70% now, if you include VAT, value-added tax, which is a sales tax. So it varies. It's around 18 or 20%. And so even without a VAT being included, it's 50%. That's pretty high already. And I don't know that the public is going to be very happy about that. And Sarkozy is presenting it only for political reasons. And everybody on the inside knows that, but the public doesn't know it. They don't understand. And the first election in France comes up in April, and the final comes up in May. And you have two major parties, the centrist, the slightly right Sarkozy's group, and then you have the socialists, who are really off to the left this time, and then you have the Front National. And it's interesting that if you go back some years, Jacques Chirac had legislation passed that made any third parties experience great difficulty in trying to qualify for the opportunity to run in the presidential race with their candidate. And they need the signatures of 500 mayors throughout France. Now, this past week, Mr. Sarkozy had more legislation passed saying that, well, not only do you have to get the signatures, we have to know who they are. And, of course, the reason is so we can punish them. So they no longer have an electoral system in France. It's just dictatorial government. And they bounce the ball back between the two major parties. And
So nothing at all like the United States, then?
Yeah, very much like the United States. Everybody's got to get their piece of the action, so they bounce it back and forth so everybody can steal. And Mr. Chirac was just found guilty of stealing. This guy's a real beauty. But they all are. But anyway, I went a little bit further than what you might expect on the answer to that question, which segues into what is being released today. Well, Martin Luther King Day takes precedent in the United States. And that is, I am watching television out of Europe, and fortunately, I speak other languages, so I know what they're talking about. And the meeting, I don't know whether the G10, the G20, the G745, they have so many meetings, I can't keep track of them all. But anyway, they had a meeting coming up on the 20th. In response to the European situation of the lowering of ratings this past week in a number of countries, including France, and also what they're going to do about funding and how they're going to do it in the six nations that are in serious trouble. And then what can we do with the banks that are now sitting on $600 billion, which was loaned from the Federal Reserve to the European Central Bank to 523 banks that we know about? So that was supposed to all be discussed. Well, it's not. They canceled the meeting on the 20th. It's going to be held late in February. And what they're doing here is they're trying to work the calendar like they have since about a year ago to keep this out of the public eye. They're getting so much heat over this, and that takes a lot of heat off the U.S. and England. You don't even hear anything about their problems, which are just as bad. And going back to Sarkozy, he's trying to stall, saying he wants this legislation for this tax when I think he knows he can't get it. But he's saying that to show his fiscal responsibility to not only the nations involved, but overall, because I know what they're looking for, and you do now because I told you. And that is a financial sales tax on every transaction. And if you do a lot of trading, you're talking about a 20% tax. But anyway, I think he wants to use that in the election, and that's why I mentioned it, because he's going to come under fierce pressure if Marie Le Pen from the National Front runs, because she's going to ask some very pertinent questions about all the problems that have occurred, including the fall of the grade of rating for France, which just went from AAA to AA+, along with a number of other nations. And France is under heat for another downgrade as well. And so that's what's going on. This is politics and all kinds of stuff going on.
As always, well, let me give you my take on the situation, and then you can tell me how off base or on base you think I am. But basically, when it comes down to this financial services tax, or the financial transaction tax, I should say, it has been proposed in many different forms over the years, the so-called Robin Hood tax, the so-called Tobin tax, and many different ideas have been floated for how to make this work, supposedly. But I see your take in the Forecaster is that basically the UK is trying to hold out for this to become a global tax, because it would only work as a global tax. And really, all I can think of when I see that is the fact that the globalists have been lusting after any sort of way of getting a funding mechanism for their global government into place, whether that be the sort of overarching idea of some sort of climate body that would distribute funds and tax people based on their carbon dioxide emissions, or whether it's something like a financial transaction tax. I don't think it really matters to them, but I think they're really hungry to get that that funding mechanism in place, because that's really one of the key elements that's missing from their global governmental structure right now. So do you think this is part of that overall global governance agenda that we've seen going on at so many different levels?
Absolutely. And if they can get both taxes, that would be terrific for them, because they'll make billions of dollars, because the carbon tax will be on an exchange. One of the big shareholders is Al Gore, and among others in the Illuminati. And so they want them both. And they just tax us, and we pay for our demise, essentially.
Well, fairly straightforward then. Then it's settled. Well, I think it's quite clear what the agenda is, but it's unfortunate that so few people are able to see past the headlines, and there are so many people who I think have been tricked into believing that this is some sort of wonderful tax that will bestow benefits on all of humanity, and the idea of the Robin Hood tax has been, well, pushed quite heavily in recent months, and seems to have suspicious amounts of funding and very slick websites and ad campaigns for the idea. So have you noticed any of this type of propaganda going on for the Robin Hood tax?
No. But, you know, they've been going at this thing for a long time, 20 years. And, you know, their perspectives are long-term. They're not interested in the short-term palliatives, at least with this taxation issue. When you take the debt issues of Europe, it's a totally different story. All they're interested in is in short-term as opposed to long-term. But in the case of these two kinds of taxes, that would be a financial we call it an execution tax, and then the carbon tax. They want them both, no question.
All right, well, let's switch topics to something else, something that came up this past week that's garnered quite a bit of media publicity, and I wanted to get your take on it as a former veteran and someone who I think probably has an opinion on this one way or another. We had the really gruesome spectacle of the Marines, the footage coming out of the Marines urinating on some corpses in Afghanistan recently. And the latest ridiculous headline to come out is from endthelie.com. Apparently, Rick Perry now jumps to the defense of Marines accused of urinating on Afghan corpses, and basically Rick Perry is trying to differentiate himself from the other GOP candidates now by saying he thinks it's over the top, but not a criminal act that these people were doing this. So just as a former veteran, as a human being, what's your take on this story and what it signifies about the war that's going on and continues to go on in Afghanistan?
It's a hard call. You know, I even question the photos because I don't know. I want to see more evidence. But, you know, when people are in combat, they do strange things. And they get really, really weird. And there's some volition within the psyche that goes forward. And sometimes, you know, when you shoot an enemy, you hate him because he wants to kill you. And so what you do is you kill him first, and maybe they did do it, maybe they didn't do it. For normal human beings, they wouldn't do things like that, unless they were in an insane asylum or something. But you got to understand the pressure that these young people are under, and most of them never killed people before, or said saw dead bodies, and so on and so forth. So I can't be too harsh on them, but I wish they'd not do things like that, because I think that's terrible. But you got to understand the circumstances, too. So I wouldn't do that if I was in that combat group, but you know, who knows? Maybe they're on drugs or drunk. And there's so many answers to it, so I'm not going to make a judgment on it.
Well, I think you and I are thinking along the same lines, because to me it smacks of something more than just a little smattering of hypocrisy that people like Hillary Clinton send these boys, basically little teenage boys, into war and put guns in their hands and tell them to kill people, and then are shocked, I tell you, to find such things going on. So I think it is hypocritical, to say the very least, at any rate. Let's move along to an interesting report that came out this week from the Nuclear Threat Initiative, which ranks the different countries and how they handle nuclear material from the most secure to the least secure. And they find that apparently just behind North Korea is Pakistan as the second least secure country in the world in terms of its radioactive materials. Of course, Pakistan does have something like 100 nuclear weapons floating around there right now, and is a very, very destabilized regime, and is in the midst of just tectonic shifts going on right now, and shifts in its alliances with NATO and all sorts of things. What's your take on the stability, not only of Pakistan, but of nuclear weapons in general, and what do you think is the real threat of a loose nuke genuinely getting out, or at least that being used as an excuse for some sort of false flag type event?
I have a subscriber, and he is a member of Special Forces. I forget what they call them. Maybe I'll think about it as I go on. He and his people, I think there's 2,000 of them in Pakistan, at the behest of the government, and they are the ones who are guarding the nuclear bombs and facilities and so on. So, unbeknownst to the American public, and I only know because I had an email from one of the guys who works there, and says, yeah, we're guarding all that stuff here, and so we get a good handle on it. Nothing's going to happen to it. And so I do know that is a fact. And if they were to get out, that presents all kinds of terrible responses or whatever. And then on top of that, will the country fractionalize among different groups? That's possible. But I think as long as the U.S. has their input there, it won't happen, nor will the nukes be used. What Pakistan's thinking of with 100 nuclear weapons is beyond me. I've always wondered why they have them and why they have so many. And but anyway, they do. And so I think they're safe, from what I've been told from people on the scene.
Well, one certainly hopes so, but this is a topic in which I'm particularly, I don't know, pessimistic, I don't know if that's the right word, maybe realistic, but really, in some ways, when you think about it, now that we're pushing 70 years of nuclear warheads on this planet, and it just seems like it's a giant game where if one of the balls drops, if one of the, pucks gets past the goalie, that could be the end of an entire city or just an entire region. I mean, it's really a terrible thing to think about, and it's one of those things that just presents a constant threat. So I don't know if I'm being particularly pessimistic or realistic on this point, but I don't like the fact that there are so many nuclear weapons that can be used in so many different ways by so many different actors for so many different purposes.
And the big question is why? I mean, you know, why does Israel have hundreds of them? Why does the United States and Russia? I mean, if we did away with them all and didn't have any more, and then if we wanted to have wars, well, we wouldn't incinerate the whole planet. And I think they should be done away with. I don't see any other reason for people. I mean, even Brazil has nuclear weapons. It's just crazy.
It's not just crazy. It almost seems suicidally crazy. And it ties in with so many of the other problems that we see, from the genetic engineering to the fluoride and things that they're putting in the water supply. There's so many things that seem to be going on at such a mass scale that seem to affect so many people. It just seems like genocide isn't the right word. What's the name for trying to eradicate a species from the planet? I mean, humanity is under attack.
You said suicide. I mean, that fits. Mutually assured destruction. I mean, you know, I don't know whether people realize it, but sooner or later, if there is a conflict between Iran and the United States and NATO, Russia and China have to get pulled into it. And if the war is going badly for, say, Russia, and they pick up out the 30 most populous American cities and level them, along with the help of the Chinese, that would be dreadful. And then, of course, in the meantime, the United States and NATO does the same thing to Russia and China. That's crazy. The whole thing is madness. I mean, doesn't anybody want to live on the planet anymore? I mean, do they realize how serious this is? And, of course, the aggressive factor is the U.S. and European governments. And why are they doing this? Geopolitical position, for the most part, getting their hands on what's left of the Iranian oil, which is about 15 years production. And you got to remember, the Iranians who are in power, the United States government put them in power. So there's all sorts of cross purposes here, and the end could be disastrous.
That's right. Well, exactly. Well, people might dispute that and might say, well, no, the Islamic Revolution in Iran was meant to depose the Shah, and the American-friendly Shah, and it brought in the Ayatollah Khomeini. But when you actually look at how he got into the country and all of the shenanigans behind that, you find that, in fact, he was aided and abetted by Britain and America. So, again, those two countries have had their hand in Iranian politics for literally a century, really, when you go back to the Anglo-Iranian oil company. So it's a lengthy...
Well, even before that, the Sassoons virtually ran the Middle East for the Rothschilds for centuries. And that's the banking cartel. You don't hear anything about that. Nobody even knows anymore who the Sassoons were. And they operated right out of Iran and Iraq as well. And they were the big money people in the Middle East. And, of course, they're all interrelated.
Surprise, surprise.
Had you ever heard of the Sassoons?
I'm going to have to admit my almost complete and total ignorance of the subject.
Well, it gives you some homework to do.
I certainly do.
I come up with some of the oddest things, but, you know, I've read so much over those many years, and you come up with things that you find astounding, but very few people know about. Well, anyway, with that said, the influence of Europe in the Middle East and in Asia has been very strong for centuries. I mean, people usually stop in recent history. We'll talk about the demise politically of Mohammad Mossadegh, which was the CIA and MI6 overthrowing the Persian government. And then they put the Shah in, who was no more Shah than a baboon, and he lasted for as long as they figured they could use him. And so then they kicked him out, and he died of cancer. And Khomeini was raiding on order in Paris. They'd been supporting him, and they whipped him in there and put him in place.
It's really quite amazing. And then also when you think about how, I believe, didn't Britain and America also sort of occupy Iran during World War II?
Who?
Britain and America also occupied Iran during World War II in the name of fighting the Nazis.
Yeah, well, you know, everything is business. How much money can I make? How rich can I get? How many people can I enslave? I mean, that's the final analysis. This is what's going on right now with this world financial debacle. It was caused deliberately. And their problem, the people who have done this, is that too many people know what they're doing. I mean, back 50 years ago, nobody knew what they were doing. But because of programs like this and the Internet itself, people are finding out just really what went on. It is going on and why they are doing what they're doing. They've taken a terrible risk because if the system goes down and enough people know why it went down and they push that legally through the courts, then these people are going to lose their power. And the base to their power is the world banking system. That's how they suppress everybody, by looting the public of every country, by using the fractional banking system.
Well, people who have been listening to the Corbett Report for any length of time know that I certainly agree with your assessment that things are on the knife edge with Iran, and that ultimately it would definitely draw in Russia and China and be the start of World War III. But we have seen massive saber rattling going on both sides regarding the Strait of Hormuz and the passage of ships there. But I have to wonder to what extent Iran is bluffing on this one, and to really just trying to sound bigger than they are at the moment, because it would be financial suicide for Iran to shut down the Strait of Hormuz. I would imagine that would be the last thing they'd want to do, and only would be an act of desperation on their part.
That's true. I think they're trying to gain time. They're desperate to gain time because they're trying to divert things. Confrontationally, they say, well, we're going to shut off the Strait of Hormuz, which supplies the world with 40% of its goods and services. And, well, I should just say goods. And they know that if they do that, it is going to lead to this third world war, perhaps. But on the other hand, we don't know what the interplay is between Russia, China, and Iran. We have no idea. So, you know, it leaves a big question mark. We see what they're doing. We figure they're doing it because they're trying to save themselves, if nothing else. But we don't know what's going behind the scenes. I mean, this might be just another disinformation process to get everybody to look every day at the Strait of Hormuz, figuring, well, gee, something's going to happen, and they're not watching what's going on in Europe and the fact that all the banks in Europe and the governments, including Germany, they're all broke. I don't think anybody wants to see that. I mean, you mean to tell me that my deposit at Deutsche Bank or Commerce Bank or one of the major French banks, even Credit Suisse and other Swiss banks as well, all of that is really worthless? Generally speaking, yes. I mean, what do you think that there's people have been storming the gates of coin dealers in Europe for the last 3 years or more, changing their euros for gold coins?
Exactly right. Well, that must be an indication of something. And I think that segues into a different topic that I think I'd be remiss in my hosting duties if I did not bring up. We managed to generate several emails from our last conversation, and a lot of them were expressing surprise and perhaps even disappointment at your analysis of the MF Global situation. So I think we should go into that in a little bit more detail to flesh out your ideas there. For example, we have Billy writing in saying, Bob Chapman seemed a little grumpy last time around. Usually I trust everything he says, but the Corzine deal with MF Global seemed way off base. And when experts call folks stupid, it seems like an intimidation ruse. That's what Mr. Chapman did. And then we had Batman writing in, an interesting pseudonym, basically saying he doesn't sound right. Audibly, he sounds normal, but his content is skewed from the majority of the independent news sources. We have Paul writing in to say that your analysis of MF Global was rather extraordinary. Has the CIA found Chapman out already, etc.? So, quite a chorus of very angry emails and disappointed and bewildered emails about that.
One of the problems here is most of the people who are commenting don't know what they're talking about, including those people with those letters. I was in the brokerage business for almost 30 years. I know all the rules. You don't know the rules. And most of the people who are commenting have never been in the brokerage business, and they don't know the rules either. And as far as people having accounts there and voicing their feelings that they've been robbed, maybe they were partially robbed. We don't know that yet. These people who had accounts there, they received 70% of their money back. I hope you noted that. And 30% is in abeyance. That's true. The money available to pay the people back what was in their accounts has been exhausted. When you sign a margin account agreement, whether it's in a general brokerage firm just to do stocks and bonds, or whether it's in a commodity firm where most of the action is in commodities, what you do is you sign away the rights to control your own account. And the brokerage firm, in this case, the commodities firm, legally lent, by hypothecation, your money away from you. Because it can do that. And then they rehypothecated it to somebody else to get some leverage. Now, nobody considered that at the beginning. On November the 4th, they were just screaming and yelling and been looted. Well, they weren't looted. What was done legally. Now, if the money was lost, that's another story. But I don't see any civil or criminal charges as yet coming against Mr. Corzine, because what his firm did initially in using the funds and whatever else was in the accounts was legal.
Well, actually, I have a story here that came out last week from ABC News. Farmers sue John Corzine over missing millions, that says Montana farmers have filed a class action suit against former New Jersey Governor John Corzine, charging that the failed financial firm run by Corzine stole millions from their accounts to pay off its spiraling debts. MF Global's clients included 38,000 wheat farmers, cattle ranchers, and others who hedged their crop prices by placing millions in MF Global accounts. Those accounts were supposed to be segregated and secure, according to the federal suit, meaning MF Global could not draw on those funds. So are the 38,000 wheat farmers in this class action suit misplaced in this lawsuit here?
No, I think they're probably right. But I, first of all, am unaware that there were such segregated accounts. Incidentally, I ran that article in my publication. And if that is the case, why hasn't the CFTC, the SEC, and the CME all brought criminal or civil charges against Mr. Corzine and others. I don't know. All I know is, and the only statement I've made, is that what they did originally was legal. Now, whether the money was taken and stolen, I don't know that. The farmers think so, and so don't their attorneys, and they darn well may be right. But we won't know until they get in court. And I see Mr. Corzine has opened an office in Manhattan, probably to handle questions, I don't know. Maybe he's going into business and starting a hedge fund, for all I know. I mean, the two characters that got the Nobel Prizes for probabilities that started that hedge fund in 1997 that went bankrupt, they were the world's experts, too. But I think a lot more evidence has to come in, and it will come out. And hopefully that the public will be served by the agencies or the courts involved, and if need be, bringing Corzine and others to justice, perhaps for misappropriating or stealing or conversion or whatever you want to call it.
Well, this is the point that I don't understand, though, because these are the same agencies and courts and others that, for example, ran you out of the United States for the work that you were doing. And now are we supposed to trust that they're going to do independent and verifiable investigations of insiders like John Corzine with his Goldman Sachs connections?
The answer is no. You can't trust them on anything. Anything. And I've dealt with them for years. My odyssey started in 1967. I had them go so far as to use other people to take me off the air by going to people who have me on the air and get them to try to take me off the air. I mean, it's ongoing. They just did it again recently. They have these little campaigns. And I just ignore them. This is a complex problem. And I don't have the answer to it. And I don't think any of the writers or any of the other professionals involved have the answers. I mean, we just don't know enough. The only thing I stand by is I know that in a margin account, they can do what they want to it. And so I think people were fortunate to get 70% back. And at the beginning, I said, I thought they'd get all their money back. And I was the only one that said that. I don't hear any of the writers talking about the 70% that was received back. They seem to have forgotten that. You know, we don't want to destroy the system. If you do that, you can't play anymore. You can't use it as a hedge. So it's something to think about, especially when it's spread into stock and bond accounts. We got raving maniacs out there screaming that the whole system's going down and they're going to steal everything from you. That's irresponsible. And, you know, I've always been on the other side versus the government. But, you know, you have to use good judgment. And bringing down the system is not good judgment. Fixing the system, changing the system is. And some of these people who are right, I've never even heard of them before, and I've been doing this for 53 years. Now, one of the things I did see over this past week was that legislation that was passed in conjunction with another bill in 20056 in that time frame, essentially, supposedly, I haven't researched this myself, and quite frankly, I don't have the time to do it. And but what the commentary has been is within that legislation, if you're involved in derivatives or rehypothecation and you start a problem in the company, you could grab everything you could get your hands on and you could keep it because you were exempt or something to that effect. Now, I haven't looked further into it, but on the other hand, 3 weeks ago, there was a court case where the federal court said, no, I think it was JPM, you can't keep that money. You got to give it to us. We got to disperse it to the retail clients, and what's left over belongs to you people. And that's a fact. It happened. So is the information we're getting from this 6-7 year old legislation, is it correct? I don't know. And was the federal court wrong in overlooking that piece of legislation that allows that? You know, federal court judges, they have their own people who help them. And so don't the adversaries, in this case JPM, who was capable of buying the best legal help in the country. And JPM, I would think, would have presented that as evidence that you can't do that, we got to keep the money. But the judge ruled against him. So I don't know. And I've asked attorneys about it, and I said, we don't know either. I was trying to find an easy way to get an answer. And so don't be too quick to pull the trigger. Let's see what happens. Look, we're not personally involved. Will we be sometime? Maybe. Is the system coming down right now? Soon? I don't think so. So it's not an important thing to most people. So keep that in mind. But originally, I did not know, and I even questioned why farmers would have different segregated accounts. I've never heard that before. But it's quite possible. And I hope they get all their money back. I hope they got their 70% back. And they probably did. Well, so let's see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to see how that unfolds, and I will certainly be keeping my eye out for that story, because I think that's a pretty large class action suit, so we'll have to see if that proceeds, and if so, how. But that might explain why Corzine is setting up that that office in, did you say, New York?
There's so much we don't know. I mean, I was just trying to go by the rules, and most of the people involved didn't even know the rules. When we have people screaming and yelling that they've been robbed, they signed the margin agreement. They should have known. And now all the money that was robbed, 70% has come back. So I guess only part of it was robbed. Or maybe it wasn't at all. Let's see how it works out.
All right, well, let's work from information as it comes in, certainly. All right, well, finally, this week, we are, of course, still in the midst of the GOP selection. Any further thoughts on the coronation of Romney, as it's put in the most recent news forecaster?
Oh, it's obvious to anybody who has any political acumen at all that he's got enough money to buy the nomination. That I think he's been hard to deal with from the powers behind the scene. And I think that's why Mr. Santorum has made the gains he's had. He's being loaded up with money. And maybe they really don't want him in there. You know, and then in the middle of the whole thing is Ron Paul, who gets no support from anybody except the general public. Pretty hard to compete. There's no question the first two elections were fixed. Absolutely none whatsoever. And, you know, that's the kind of world we live in. And where it's going to go, I don't know. I want Ron Paul to be president of the United States. Is that possible? Yes, it is. Is it probable? Not at this moment. But I think it could be. Groundswells have a funny way of happening. And some event could trigger everybody saying, oh, he's the guy. No matter how much the money the other guy's got. I mean, I can't believe the Republican National Committee was dumb enough to get caught giving out dead people's ballots. I mean, you know.
Nothing suspicious about
that. I just can't believe it. I mean, I'm sure these people didn't do it on their own.
Well, unfortunately, nothing that we haven't seen in previous election cycles, but yes, it continues, and it always raises the question of, if not the ballot box, then what? What is the alternative?
I don't even want to contemplate it, because anybody that's ever been in contact with war knows it's a horrible, horrible thing. And there are no winners. And that's where it's headed. If the public doesn't get a shot at getting fair elections. And the course that the United States and Europe and England are on is disastrous. They have to collapse. There's no question about it. There's no way to avoid it. They set it up that way. And they obviously feel they can handle the military to handle the public. And I think they made a mistake. Because if the military doesn't do what they tell them to do, then you get a coup on your hands, and these people are all being lined up for treason.
Well, that sounds like a plug for Oath Keepers to me. And why not? A great organization. But at any rate, of course, we'll have to keep our eye on what's developing in the election, whether it's rigged or not. And I'm sure there will be more shenanigans going on in the voting booth. But at any rate, I'm sure we'll be keeping our eye on it here in our weekly conversations, but also, of course, at theinternationalforecaster.com. So tell people a little bit about the Forecaster and how people can get their hands on a copy.
Well, the Forecaster is about business, finance, economic, social, political issues all over the world. Published on Wednesday and Saturday, usually runs 35 or 40 pages each time. And we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month for those who are not on the internet. And everything you need to know each week is in that publication. We offer a free introductory copy through our site, theinternationalforecaster.com, theinternationalforecaster.com, or at www.intforecaster.com, intforecaster.com. For those of you who like to ask a question, and we answer everyone, or want a report on of the International Forecaster, or for those who would like a report on gold and silver shares, we'll send that along as well. And you do that by going to Bob, B-O-B, at intforecaster.com. Bob at intforecaster.com. For those of you who must call toll free, and there are people who are not on the internet still, that number is 877-479-8178, 877-479-8178. You can get the reports there. And if you'd like to become a subscriber, that's a good place to go to. And the reason why is they have a free one-year subscription available, and the deal that they're offering is really terrific, and you should think about taking advantage of it if you want to be a subscriber.
And if you're not on the internet but listening to the Corbett Report, you really must tell me how you're doing that. But unfortunately, the only way to do that is through emailing me through my website, so catch 22. At any rate, Bob Chapman, always a lively conversation. So until next week, thank you again for your time.
You're very welcome, and thank you all for listening.